I'm Phoebe White from the U.S. Rates Strategy Team at J.P. Morgan, and you're listening to At Any Rate, our global research podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and industries in markets today. I'm here with Alex Rover, head of U.S. Rates Strategy, and Mike Feroli, our chief U.S. economist, and we're going to be talking about the U.S. funding markets, the tools the Fed's been using to inject liquidity into the system, and where we go from here. So, Alex, let me start with you. Let's talk about your end. Why was it such a non-event for funding markets?
Yeah, I think you know, there had been such an expectation around year-end and whether or not it could be stressful. I mean, really, the prior 2 years, you know, we'd seen a fair amount of funding stress in markets, in part because of expectations around liquidity being withdrawn due to effects of the G-SIB surcharge that the largest banks faced. This year, you know, with the issues that we had in September, you know, the Fed had gotten very active in terms of, you know, providing liquidity support into the markets, you know, trying to grow the size of reserves, you know, through both temporary operations, so effectively coming in and doing repo operations in the markets, and permanent open market operations, so effectively, you know, buying bills. And the combination of that, you know, put about, you know, well, actually over $400 billion of liquidity into the market ahead of year end. And, you know, it was so much liquidity that you know, effectively there really wasn't that market stress out there. So, you know, I guess surprisingly, you know, the market finished the year, you know, it was pretty uneventful.
Right. Yeah. So even with the $400 billion or more of liquidity that was injected, reserves only rose about $91 billion over year end. So Mike, can you break that down for us? What are the other factors on the balance sheet that can also affect reserves?
Right. So reserves are one of only several liabilities on the Fed's balance sheet. But reserves do serve as the plug on the balance sheet. So when those other liabilities increase or decrease, reserves decrease or increase. So the two other liabilities that have been important recently have been the Treasury General Account and the Foreign Repo Pool. Both of those had increased and had absorbed some of the reserves being supplied by other factors, which Alex had mentioned, both the temporary and permanent open market operations. And so that has limited the increase in reserves, at least early on. Though more recently, we have seen reserves start to pick up the growth that has been intended. And so that has been one of the beneficial effects of the Fed's operations.
Okay, so we're moving towards an ample level of reserves. The Fed's indicated, you know, once they get to that ample level, that these ongoing large repo operations won't be necessary. So they're starting to reduce the TOMOs. Alex, can you talk about that? What is the path forward for those operations?
Yeah. So, you know, where do we go from here? You know, it's always harder to unwind things than it is to get things going. You know, thinking about the difference in the TOMOs and the POMOs, you know, through year end, the TOMOs, the repo operations were very effective in terms of like putting liquidity directly into the repo market. And so I think as the Fed is unwinding and moving away from the support that it had at year end, it's going to be very slow about sort of decreasing the amount of liquidity in the system. So, you know, they'll continue with their bill purchases. We anticipate they'll be buying about $60 billion a month of bills, you know, through April. And then along the way, we think that they'll be decreasing the size of their TOMOs, but only very gradually. In fact, just yesterday, the Fed released a schedule of what it expected it would be its temporary operations schedule going forward for the next several weeks. And it's really only a very gradual decline. You know, we'll probably see some of the term operations decrease first, and then, you know, slowly we'll start to see the overnight operations come down alongside that. I do think that going forward, since the TOMOs proved themselves to be, you know, a very strong tool for providing liquidity into the market, they may never entirely go away. I mean, I think they may become more episodic, you know, a tool for the Fed to use around periods that are high liquidity needs. So you can think about large treasury settlements or corporate tax days. It's possible we might see, you know, the TOMOs deployed, you know, more regularly in that sort of schedule. But in terms of like the aggregate plan for the Fed, I think it's a very sort of slow retreat, you know, continuing to do the bill purchases. And then even sort of once we're past April and they've sort of, you know, hit their target with the bill purchases, you know, it's very likely they're going to have to continue to buy treasuries and probably more across the curve as the Fed's other liabilities continue to grow going forward.
Yep. And those will be at a much slower pace than the current pace of purchases.
About $10 billion a month, we think, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, not necessarily pulling liquidity out of the system, but, you know, reducing the pace of these injections. Mike, what do you think the effects of those are? Are people starting to talk about quantitative tightening again? Mm-hmm. What are the risks there?
Right. So we don't really think this has macroeconomic implications. So people who talk about quantitative tightening as though, or the reverse of quantitative easing, I think we have to go back to quantitative easing and see what that was really intended to do. And it was really intended to lower interest rates that were facing households and businesses. So things like mortgage rates and longer term interest rates. And when the Fed was doing that, they were buying longer duration assets, both treasuries and mortgages. So currently, the Fed is buying bills, and so that shouldn't really affect longer-term interest rates. So it shouldn't affect mortgage rates. It shouldn't affect how we value longer-term assets like stocks and so forth. And so if the Fed is slowing the pace of bill purchases, we don't see this having a first-order effect on longer-term interest rates, and therefore we don't see it having an effect on the macroeconomic outlook. So concerns about quantitative tightening or less material support for the economy here, we think, is pretty misplaced. And so any slowing in the pace of Fed purchases is not changing our view on the macro economy.
Right. Okay. And Alex, do you think markets agree with that? What do you think the market's effects will be?
I think some folks in the market struggle with it, but I think there's a level of nuance that, you know, I think in the bond market we probably have that, you know, in the broader markets maybe, you know, isn't as well appreciated. And so I sort of understand that. I mean, you know, I think about sort of the original QE. I mean, you think about, you know, the Fed's name for it is an LSAP, so a large scale asset purchase. I think about what they've done here really is more of a large scale liquidity support operation, and I think that really is more about addressing the market structure, making sure of Treasury finance, and making sure that there's, you know, ample liquidity for the Treasury market to continue to function. And that's really, I think, more so than being sort of a— yeah, I think that's an ongoing function of what the Fed's supposed to do, as opposed to, you know, necessarily being, you know, something like an LSAP, which is like very, I think, more event specific.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the Fed's action specifically. So Alex, you mentioned that there will probably need to be some sort of liquidity facility going forward, especially around these certain dates where funding can become impaired. Mike, how likely is it in your view that the Fed introduces an SRF, a standing repo facility, and what's the timing of that?
Right. So they've been talking about this off and on since early last year, and they've been really talking about it in depth since the middle of last year. That said, we haven't gotten much specifics in the way of how their thinking is evolving. So they've talked about pluses and minuses. We do think it's probably more likely than not that they do establish something like a standing repo facility. Certainly other central banks that operate a corridor system have introduced standing repo facilities as an adjunct to that system. So again, nothing's certain here. They haven't told us anything definitively, but we think the odds are probably tilted in favor of that being established. And we think if they do, it could be as soon as by the second quarter of this year that it could be up and running. Again, conditional on them actually seeing the pluses outweigh the minuses.
Right. Okay. So, Alex, one more question for you before we go. What do you think the implications of all the repo market volatility last fall will be for the benchmark reform process and SOFR specifically?
Yeah, so SOFR is you know, one of the issues that probably has gotten a lot of attention because of the repo market volatility. Essentially, SOFR is the new benchmark that's being deployed in the dollar space, and it's based entirely off of Treasury repo settings on a daily basis. As it's going to be used, SOFR will be a benchmark, you know, that's measured over a period of time, say 1 month or 3 months. But the daily volatility that we saw during the latter part of last year, you know, was off-putting to a lot of folks who are potentially going to become SOFR users. And I think there's an education process that probably needs to be engaged in by, you know, the Fed and the official sector, and trying to explain and reiterate why SOFR is the, you know, the benchmark of choice going forward, because it's based off of risk-free rates, because it's based off of the rates that the you know, the Treasury market's financed in, and the Treasury market's the largest, deepest market in the world. I think it adds some impetus for the Fed to make sure that the plumbing around repo is running more smoothly, and probably helps to support some of the things we talked about on this podcast, which are continuing to make sure there's an abundance of liquidity in the repo markets, and making sure that there are mechanisms in place, whether it's a standing repo facility or some other facility, to make sure that the market continues to function smoothly.
Thanks. And I know you've written a lot of research on this, and I want to say thanks to our listeners for joining us today. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, J.P. Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read J.P. Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2020, J.P. Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on January 21st, 2020.